How do you like the wine?
It's delicious.
Should we do a free promotion for our friends over at William Chris Winery?
Sure. Yes.
We are, as we get started here, we're having a little beverage because it's the weekend and we can. And our friends over at William Chris Winery in Fredericksburg, or just outside of Fredericksburg, we have a lovely bottle of wine from them. So if you're looking for some good Texas wines, check them out.
It's so delicious.
We're also having a little toast to the life of our grandmother, who we said goodbye to not that long ago. So to you, Betty Mae.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Chink, chink.
We talk about urban legends.
Should we do urban legends, or should we just keep catching up?
Because I keep talking about this wine, because it's delicious.
No, okay, it's a good wine. Okay, so no secret, right, that I'm an East Coast girl. I mean, I'm not. I'm a Texan girl, but like in my heart and in my soul, I'm an East Coaster.
Correct.
Which I definitely get from my mother. But today,
also correct,
we are heading to the most northeastern part of the United States, and we find ourselves in one of my very favorite states. Want to take a guess?
Well, it's not Maryland.
Maine, that's right.
I wonder how creepy that's going to sound, me whispering.
I'm going to boost the audio so we can hear it, too. So I love Maine. I've been a couple of times. In 2015, I was going through a pretty hard time, actually. We were struggling to grow our family. My work situation was pretty abusive. I worked in a very unhealthy situation, and it was just not a good space. And so my mom, who knows me best, said, "Is there any way you can take a couple days off?" And that question turned into a mother-daughter trip through New England to go see some of the leaves change colors. And it's probably one of, if not my favorite vacation I've ever taken. So it was just a great time.
Those pictures were so beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, like, the pictures didn't do it justice. It was that beautiful. Love that part of the country, love the culture, and just getting to spend 4 or 5 days one-on-one, just me and mom. It was a great time. So we sipped fresh cider in Vermont. Highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. We walked the Freedom Trail in Boston, a place that I never get tired of going. Mm-hmm. But the highlight of the trip was our visit to Kennebunkport in Maine. So if Stars Hollow was a real place and ever existed, it would be Kennebunkport.
It doesn't?
As far as I'm concerned, it does.
Yeah.
But it was very much like Gilmore Girl vibes. Yeah. Absolutely, in Kennebunkport. So I've actually been back a couple of times, and I would be happy to go back again. My dad actually just said that the other day, like, maybe we should all go back to Kennebunkport. Like, it's just one of those places that you're like, I kind of connected with this village. It's just a small place.
Yeah. I'd love to go. Like, that sounds awesome. Gilmore Girls in a real, like,
I sense a girl's trip.
Yes, correct.
If the age of Corona ever ends, that might be high up on the list. So it was only after I came back from that trip and doing some research. I tend to do research sometimes on the back end where I don't know that I want to do research, and then I experience something and I'm like, I want to learn more. So you do more research. So I did that when we came back from New England, and I found out after I was home that the King of Horror himself, Stephen King, has a home in Bangor, Maine, which is not Kennebunkport, but it's just not a huge state.
No, it's not.
It's a super cool house. You should look up pictures sometime. It's decorated with gargoyles on the outside.
Correct.
And,
sounds about right.
Talia, our friend, actually found an article not all that long ago that said Stephen King was considering turning his home into a writer's retreat that you could, like, apply for this program. So, like, if that ever happens, obviously.
You're obviously going.
I'm applying.
That's awesome.
He'd probably take one look at my written work and be like, no. No, that's not happening.
But you don't understand.
I need to be here. It's obvious that Maine's not out of my system, and I was excited that that was my episode.
Yeah.
I'm excited it's your episode.
It feels fitting.
Yeah.
I've never been there, so yeah.
Yeah.
I want to, now like I just, it. I really want to go.
Yeah. It's very,
Girls Trip 2022.
You know how, and I mean this in the most respectful sense, but sometimes, like, impression of East Coast is a little, as my mother-in-law would say, a little upmarket, like, fancy, people kind of impressed with themselves, like, maybe snooty, maybe not, but kind of on that edge, right? I feel like the East Coast just gives off, like, the East Coast vibe kind of thing. But in my experience, like, actually, that's not really true, regardless of how much money the town has. So Martha's Vineyard is, like, one of the most luxurious, wealthy towns, And the people there are not pretentious. Like, they don't wear makeup. They just have, like, long-sleeve t-shirts on at the beach. Like, they have so much money, they don't have to dress like they have money, if that makes any sense at all.
What is that like?
I don't know.
I found that when we went to New York, that everybody talks about how rude people in New York are, and I was like, I didn't find that at all. No. Everybody was kind to us. It's just, you know, people are about their day, and, you know, don't
They're
have
just
time.
Not uber-friendly. They're just busy.
You can't stop and talk to 1 million people on the way to work. Like, you can't just wave at everyone you pass on the road.
I felt that way about France, honestly.
I loved France. I didn't think they were rude at all.
No, if you're not a jerk, like, they're going to be nice to you.
Yeah.
What? No. Okay, but in Kennebunkport, right? Mm-hmm. Is there, like, the cutest coffee shop? Because in my head, they have a cute, like,
they have really...
No, I don't know that we went to a coffee shop, but I can't imagine
that
there's not one.
Right.
It was kind of, you know, in and out trips both times. But, like, that's where Bush, President Bush 41, the one who's now passed, like, their summer estate, Walker's Point, is there.
Okay.
And
oh, wow.
So, like,
okay.
The whole Bush family would go, and I have no idea, like, if they still go or not now that he and Barbara have both passed, but it's still in the family, and it's just very non-pretentious. Like, they would say, like, you would see 41 or sometimes 43, like, at the store, and just, hey, how are you? Like, just, they were just a part of the town.
This is Martha's Vineyard? Or
no, this is Kennebunkport.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, Martha's Vineyard was more like the Kennedys, I think.
Ah, yes.
Or Chappaquiddick, but that's like where the Kennedy and the Bridget, anyway, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay, let's refocus here, Erin. Okay, so Maine was kind of interesting because when I started researching and Googling, it was like a laundry list of urban legends. So many of them.
Mm-hmm.
However, interestingly enough, there were a lot of them, but it was very difficult to find much detail on any of them. So this week... We are doing quantity versus in-depth research. So we're actually going to cover three. And they're not terribly long.
Okay.
So now that I've spent 10 minutes building up, maybe I'll start this episode. How do you guys feel about that?
I'm ready.
Can we talk longer?
Oh, we can.
I'm just
have to cut it out.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. Welcome to Maine, the Pine Tree State, also known as Vacation Land, which makes total sense to me after having been a couple of times. Maine is the 12th smallest state, and it's the 13th least densely populated.
Mm.
So it's small, but to even be as small as it is, there's just not a ton of people.
Not a lot of people.
Okay, it's known for its jagged, rocky coastline, its abundance of moose, and incredible seafood, especially lobster.
I want to see a moose so bad.
I did too, and I told that to Mom, and she was like, no, it'll kill us.
Oh, well.
She also said that when I wanted to go whale watching, she's like, I've seen Jaws. I'm like, that was a shark.
That was a shark. Yeah. Okay. And back on track.
This is a train wreck already. Interestingly enough, Maine is the only state in the United States that only borders one other state, and that's New Hampshire.
Mm.
Yeah, didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Now that I'm picturing it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it does border Canada, but it only borders one other U.S. state.
Right.
For thousands of years, indigenous people were the only inhabitants of the territory known as Maine. The genetic subgroup known as the Algonquin Natives make up over 29 languages, including but not limited to Blackfoot, Arapaho, Kickapoo, and Cheyenne. Those were the most easily recognizable ones. There were so many that I just never heard of, so I just included a few. Indigenous people in our country are in severe danger of endangerment or of becoming extinct, though that may be best visited in a different podcast episode. But I want to give some respect to the people who were here before the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
When researching Maine, there were about four or five urban legends that kept popping up, but it was difficult to find so many details or to substantiate those facts. So we're going to talk about a few different ones. And we're going to start first with what I thought was the creepiest, and that is the Sabbatus Well Descent.
What did you call me?
Sabbatus. Sit down, Sabbatus.
I feel like that could be a dog name. I'm not sure after the
Fergus,
research.
Fergus, Saoirse, and Sabbatus, go to your room.
Oh, God.
Okay, the story goes. A group of teens in the 1990s, so not all that long ago, dared a friend of theirs to be lowered into a well.
Nope.
I haven't even started.
I know.
Okay, lowered into a well in the town of Sabbatus, which isn't really near anything at all, but the closest large town would be Portland. Not that close. This well was located at the back of a cemetery that was reported to be haunted.
For the love.
Yes, that's correct.
You need better hobbies.
The boy.
Not you.
I need better hobbies.
People know.
Spending this time with you is my only hobby. This boy wanted to impress his friends, so he agreed to the challenge. He sat atop a rubber tire, and his friends lowered him into the well.
Nope.
Feeling good?
Be cautioned against peer people, people.
Peer pressure.
Put that on a shirt.
I've forgotten how to speak.
It's been that kind of year. All right, he was down there for quite some time, and his friends couldn't see him.
No.
When there was no more give him the rope, and they heard no noise, his friends started to get a little bit nervous, and they pulled him back up.
Did they, though?
Was he a skeleton?
He was alive.
Oh.
But very different from the boy that they had lowered down.
Oh, I don't like that.
His hair had turned completely white, his entire body was shaking, and he was unable to form coherent sentences. He just laughed maniacally.
That's worse.
That is worse.
That's worse than being missing.
A friend of his said that his appearance seemed to be that of an old man. He was institutionalized not long after the incident and supposedly is still in the county mental institution where occasionally he's known to scream from the windows.
Oh my god, I wonder if that's true. That is terrifying.
It's funny you say that.
Oh yay!
Because to me, when I read this, and I looked it up on 10 websites, and I could get no more detail than what I just shared with you. So this sounded very urban legend-y to me, and I did some digging. On these searches, and I put here in my notes 10, like it really, I really looked at 10 different places. This was the number one urban legend for the state of Maine, but the details I shared was absolutely all that I could find on the subject. I did find a question on a Reddit forum that's 6 months old from where we are now, 6 months ago. Someone asked which cemetery the boy visited. I think the Reddit user was trying to find out if there was any truth to the story. It turns out that Sabdis has 10 different cemeteries, but no one was exactly sure which one was the scene for the story. And additionally, no one has been able to confirm the name of the boy, his friends, or the possible institution where he may be located. Mm. What do you think?
I don't want it to be true.
Yeah, this poor child.
Oh my god.
It doesn't sound real to me. Like, it sounds like the sort of story that someone does at a sleepover, or like someone just makes it up one day and then it's repeated so often that it becomes like a common story.
Very urban legend like. Yeah.
It's no less scary.
Right.
I just think the fact that there were no details, but I'm telling you, number one in the state of Maine.
Wow. That is wild. And you couldn't find anything.
No.
Wow. Mm-mm. Wow.
That's it.
Mm. Alrighty then.
So let's shift gears.
All right, where are we going?
Okay. The idea of creepy lakes and monsters within them are nothing new.
Nope.
Loch Ness is the most famous, with the monstrous Nessie, who makes a few, very few appearances over the years. But actually, according to my research, there are many other lake monsters, including Lake Superior, Lake Ontario, and even the Hudson River. This was all news to me. In Maine, we have the Poco Moonshine Lake and her monster.
Oh. All right.
So this is the story of the Poco Moonshine Lake monster. This lake, which is in Washington County, has held stories of lake monsters for as long as any Mainer in the area can remember. Poco Moonshine Lake is a 4-square-mile lake in parts of Princeton and Alexander. It is the alleged home of an alleged sea monster that is 4 feet wide and 30 to 60 feet long. So just process that for a moment. That's a big thing.
It's pretty long.
That's a big thing.
That's very long.
The legend behind the monster stems from Native American conflict in the area. Mm. The following is taken from mysteriousuniverse.org, a source that is somewhat reliable for myths. I would like it noted I am directly quoting, so if I'm not using proper terminology, that's why. Quote, "The Algonquin Indians of Maine have seen a monster in Poco Moonshine Lake for centuries. Legend has it that the monster is a result of a disagreement between an Algonquin shaman and a chief of the Mi'kmaq. The Mi'kmaq chief turned into an enormous serpent, which the shaman vanquished and tied to a tree next to the lake." End quote.
It's harsh.
I felt so. The Alexander Crawford Historical Society wrote about the monster at some point during the frenzy, comparing non-believers of the monsters to members of the Flat Earth Society.
Okay.
So the implication that if you don't believe in the monster, you are as much of an idiot as if you believe the Earth is flat.
I see. Okay.
However, the only real sighting of the monster was based on a trail that came out of the lake. Sewell S. Quimby wrote to the Union's editor to refute the claims he heard, and he said, quote, "Mr. Editor, as I was returning home Saturday night, I heard a man say with great earnestness that he had seen the man that saw the great snake. So put all that together, that's a
man saw snake.
And that they were going to lease the ground around Chain Lakes for a hunting ground, and they were having great chains made, huge traps constructed, harpoons, lances, spears, gaffs, and barbs in readiness when the spring opened. And they were going to capture, if possible, the monster of the mighty deep, now landlocked in the small freshwater ponds of the Machias Chain Lakes. Just a little later, I heard another person say, with the same vim, that they had seen a man that saw the man that said he saw the great snake. Hall and Libby were on the shore of Chain Lake. They heard a noise and saw what they took to be a man in a skiff, but soon became convinced it was a serpent. Its smallest part was as large as a pork barrel.
A what? All right.
A pork barrel.
Correct. Okay.
You know, pork barrels.
Yeah. You would be familiar with pork barrels.
Mm-hmm.
He says when last seen in the outlet, it had left the water and passed a distant point of land covered with granite boulders, end quote. Mm. Quimby said the trail was because of freezing and thawing of the swamp, but he was probably just jealous that he didn't see the sea monster.
No, mm-hmm. Right?
That's what this article says.
I'm a salty Quimby.
Salty Quimby.
In Maine, so that's the legend, right? Like, essentially a giant snake, mm-hmm. Right?
That someone saw that
someone saw a man who saw a man who saw a man.
Right,
but
correct.
The stories do date way, way back, so that's just the only, like, gotcha. Substantiated,
right.
That's not substantiated.
Gotcha. But,
right. However, in Maine, there is only one species of water snake, mm-hmm. And that's the northern water snake. The northern water snake maxes out at its largest to 4 feet long, so it doesn't even begin to fit the size of the sightings of
right.
The Poca Moonshine Lake monster. But even during the time period of its sightings, a skeptic was already crushing dreams. Brewer businessman Manly Hardy, what a name,
sorry,
said
what?
Manly Hardy said the sightings could simply have been otters. That's a big otter.
That is not an otter.
It's a big otter.
Yes.
60-foot otter.
Uh-huh, right. Mm-hmm.
It's a big thing. So here's Manly. I have a quote from Manly.
Okay, Manly.
It's the best name.
Manly ever. Hartley.
Quote, often four or five are seen in company. When swimming, one is usually in the lead and the others follow in his wake with short intervals in between. And when their backs roll out of the water as they swim, three or four will often look like one body 30 or 40 feet in length. The seeing of several swimming in this manner has undoubtedly given rise to the stories often repeated in our newspapers of large freshwater snakes, serpents, or monsters being seen in our lakes, end quote.
Okay.
I could follow that train of thought.
Yes, but I've been to the zoo, and I've never seen otters swim like that. Now, with that being said, I know that's not the wild, but that is crazy to me.
Mm.
Huh.
I don't disagree.
Hmm. Otters are my favorite.
They're so cute.
They're
precious.
They're water puppies.
They're kind of water puppies.
They're funny.
They're funny.
Big slippery Bailey in the water.
Oh, God. That sounds terrible.
It does. I agree. That's gross.
That'll be a mess.
Some people have even reported seeing the snake-like beings along with the trails that they leave behind when they come to and leave the lake. While there are no photos of the creatures, locals estimate them to be anywhere from 30 to 60 feet long, and could date back as far as 1873. All reports indicate that the lake monster is serpent-like in nature.
Okay. Mm. I think it exists.
Okay.
I think it's probably
I'm just kidding. I don't
more
know.
Likely than the well.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes. The well is still... That's trippy.
Here's my thought. Whether Poca Moonshine Lake is an example of this or not, there's too many stories throughout history of too many lakes with creatures that can't be
defined.
Explained. True. Thank you.
Yes.
And this earth is old enough and has seen so many species of animals, and there are so many things that live in water we can't see.
That we don't know about, yeah.
But I don't think it's irrational to assume that there could potentially be something we know very little about, whether it's
true.
You know, a dinosaur that survived the extinction, or it's a giant snake we don't know anything about that's, you know, doesn't need a lot of light. I don't know.
Either one of these possibilities are fascinating.
Yeah. I'd prefer it be the dinosaur, just because I think that's the most interesting. But we all saw how Jurassic Park ended up. So.
Right. No. Sure. No one needs that.
Let's not give that potential too much energy.
Tammy's face.
Nope. So we're going to wrap up with a good ghost story.
Okay.
Yes.
Wouldn't be my episode.
No.
This is the story of the Seguin Island Light.
Okay.
Like many people who are obsessed with the East Coast, I love a good lighthouse. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the appeals of the town where I live is there is a lighthouse in our harbor. As you saw earlier, there's also a lighthouse at my son's
lighthouse
school.
Daycare.
We like lighthouses. I also love a good ghost story, so no surprise that I threw in a haunted tale in this main episode. The Seguin Island Lighthouse is one of the oldest lighthouses in Maine, located on a small island called Seguin, right off the coast of Phippsburg and Popham Beach. Not only is the Seguin Island Lighthouse the second oldest in the state, it's also the tallest lighthouse in Maine, and was commissioned by General and later President George Washington.
I see.
In 1795.
Okay.
So there's your history for you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This particular story begins somewhere in the early 1800s, according to Haunted Lights. The lighthouse caretaker and his wife were set to spend the winter isolated away on Seguin Island. I don't know how much you guys know about lighthouse life.
It's very isolated.
It is,
right?
Yes. And so, like, quite often, because the point of a lighthouse, and, you know, I'm not trying to be condescending if you already know this, but the point of a lighthouse is that it beams light out for ships
and boats
and things in the harbor so that they know when they're getting closer to land and they know their safety, and also to warn them away because there's usually jagged rocks, right?
Right.
So oftentimes these lighthouses are set at very far points. It's not like they're just part of the community. They're often on islands like this one was. And so, you know, before like ferries and easier modes of transportation, like you might spend months at a time with only the provisions that you have. It was a very lonely life.
Right.
So in this story, the lighthouse caretaker and his wife were going to spend the winter isolated on Seguin Island. So in hopes that his new bride, so I guess this was a new marriage, would not become depressed in her isolation, the keeper had a piano brought to the island with them for her to play.
That was nice of him.
It was. Unfortunately, there was only one piece of music included with the piano.
Oh my god.
Which the keeper's wife played over and, and over
and over.
The keeper had new music brought to the island, hoping that she would, pardon the pun, change her tune.
But she didn't.
But she did not. She continued to play the same song until one day the keeper snapped, decimating the piano with an axe. Then, in a bit of rage, turned the axe on his bride.
Oh god.
Whoops.
And eventually took his own life, leaving the lighthouse unattended.
Yikes. This escalated quickly.
Very quickly.
I kind of feel like I may have heard the story or a version of this story before.
It's very urban legend-y, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, people wondered what was wrong because the lighthouse was not being tended to, and they ventured to the island to make a gruesome discovery. The haunting of Seguin Island is no secret among sailors from the area. There continue to be stories of hearing piano music coming from the island.
No.
As the keeper's wife continues to play her song.
Well, good for her.
Visitors to the island believe there's still something strange that exists there.
She said, murder me, I see.
That's right. You're stuck with me for eternity in this one song.
What's the song?
I don't know, actually. I wish I'd looked that up.
The moral of the story is, don't tell your wife what to do.
Look, I can get behind that.
Don't murder your wife because she's going to carry on tormenting you.
That's
in the
right.
Fair.
I do like to tell Kevin, don't tell me no. I always look at it as a strong suggestion.
That is, I've heard you say that many times. Mm-hmm.
The United States Coast Guard is now responsible for the lighthouse and for the foghorn on the island. A group called the Friends of the Seguin Island Light Station oversee the care of the island itself. There are consistent tours to Seguin Island throughout the summer, as it continues to be one of Maine's most interesting and perhaps most haunted islands in the state. So there were a lot more options for stories. I thought three was enough, even though with all of our chatter at the beginning, it's still a fairly short episode. But I would end it with saying, as we approach my favorite season of all, fall, who wants to road trip to Maine and see the leaves change?
Me.
I do.
Yep. Road trip feels like the only safe form of travel in 2020.
That's not wrong. That's not wrong.
My favorite thing that Amanda ever says is, that's not wrong. And I'm like, I know, that's why I said it.
She does say that a lot.
I
probably because I'm not wrong very often.
You're not wrong.
Were you about to say that's not wrong?
Thanks for listening to Salt Over Your Shoulder,
a Redwater production.
We appreciate your support. Your download allowed our crazy idea to gain steam and make it into your podcast directories.
We couldn't do this without you. If you'd like to continue your support, you can engage with us on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at SaltThePod, or follow us on Facebook at Salt Over Your Shoulder. You can also email us at saltoveryourshoulder@gmail.com.
Special thanks to the one and only Andrew York for our awesome graphic.
If you'd like to continue your support, please consider giving us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast directory. This helps other people find us as well.
You can also become one of our patrons at patreon.com/salt.